Support for WMNF comes from our members and Frog Song Organics. Each week, Frog Song Organics delivers healthy produce and pasture-raised meats directly to homes and businesses in the Tampa Bay area. More at frogsongorganics.com, featuring seasonal crops, online shopping, and CSA.
And this is WMNF Tampa, 88.5 on the left side of your dial. Best little radio station on planet Earth. We're here with the Health and Nutrition Show with Dr. Fred Harvey, and let me see if I can get him up. Fred, are you there?
Hello there.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What are we going to talk about today?
Well, I was thinking about talking about dementia prevention because we have a lot of problems around that seem to be not as easily treated as one might hope with the kind of technological skill that we have in Western societies to treat illnesses.
Yes, yes.
The dementia issue is very, very complex. You know, they've had something like 278 different drugs in trial, and all the trials have failed, including the ones that are actually approved for use currently today. Group of drugs that includes donepezil and memantine, they are not actually treating dementia. They're simply treating the neurologic consequences of the dementia and kind of shore up a little bit of function to help people seem like they're thinking, but they're not really. These are just Band-Aid symptom reducers that last a short while. But the Lancet has put out over the past couple of years several different really important articles and consensus about this dementia. They have a paper called Dementia Prevention, Intervention, and Care, which really focuses on what to do next. They have a great seminar called Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's disease, also available online. I think I sent these links to WMNF so they could get posted. We'll post them on my website, too.
Yes.
But it's really amazing. We have such an epidemic here, and with ever-increasing amounts of people involved, I think we really need to pay attention to the possibility of actually preventing it. The Lancet has told us about 12 target areas, target risk factors. So we can start in early life with working on education. I see education as one of the biggest problems for our society, especially this very advanced country in which we live has a real problem in healthcare because we don't have good education. If we fix education, we'll fix a lot of problems, like abortion, for instance. But it also is going to make a huge impact in dementia because it's suggested that 8% of dementia is a result of not having an education. So training the brain actually prevents dementia.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And so as long as we keep doing it, in fact, we've even shown in more recent studies that if we keep training, even with people with cognitive decline, we can recover it. So if people start learning a new language or learn how to play the piano or something in later life, they're actually working to prevent dementia. Another big thing that's really missed is hearing loss. People with hearing loss don't really cognate or think the same way everybody else does because they're missing information, and they fill in the information, and so it starts to become a confabulation, and their reality then can become somewhat disconnected. Combine that with a little bit of cognitive impairment already, and you can end up with some really rapidly advancing dementia.
Yeah, that's true, and I have a problem with my left ear, and if I get wax in my right ear, I'm in trouble.
Absolutely.
You know, I did them clean once a year on purpose because in this business, I put headphones on. I really have to know what I'm listening to.
Yes, absolutely. And with earphones, too, when you put the earbuds in, it can compact the wax. So definitely getting them cleaned is a really good thing.
Yes.
And those are the two biggest impact areas, like 8% for education and 9% for hearing loss. Then we have smaller percentages of impact from traumatic brain injury. NFL player that just went and killed the family, that's such a sad thing. He probably had chronic traumatic encephalopathy that made his personality completely deteriorate. Apparently, he went crazy in a very rapid amount of time, and that happens after traumatic brain injury. So if we can prevent traumatic brain injuries, making sure that everybody wears helmets, we reduce impact sports in youth, let adults make their decision, but should we be subjecting under 18 to traumatic brain injury sports? I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, it's been coming out more and more lately about that, you know, protecting younger people.
Yeah, exactly. Hypertension, also related to obesity, also related to alcohol consumption. Those three kind of go together, but treating those can make a big impact. Smoking, a 5% impact. If you smoke, you decrease blood flow to your brain and you decrease your cognition. Very bad thing.
Oh, yeah.
Depression is a really interesting thing that came up in the discussion, too. But depression is a description of symptoms, not a disease. I mean, a lot of people call it a disease, but there are no markers, blood tests, or brain images that anyone uses to diagnose depression. So is depression or the depressed mood actually a symptom of the damage that's occurring causing the dementia? There's the question we need to find out. Physical inactivity, we know that exercise is necessary for life, for thrival. You can turn back depression. You can turn back diabetes. You can turn back cancer with doing 30 minutes of exercise a day. So we need to work on that for the brain, too. Really interesting recent information has come up that we can get dementia from inhaling toxins. Yes. Inhalational Alzheimer's disease, an unrecognized and treatable epidemic. One of the things that we inhale, and this is a really problematic thing, is that we inhale mycotoxins, mold poop, essentially. 50% of American buildings are suggested to be actually mold toxic. So that can actually cause huge amounts of cognitive dysfunction. You can hear me talking all over the board here with all kinds of different places where we can intervene. That's because this is a really complex illness. We haven't found a cause for Alzheimer's, and I don't believe we're going to find a cause for Alzheimer's because it's too multifactorial. It's like autism. I fully agree with the statements that have been made by the public health people that vaccines do not cause autism. But that said, I will refute the idea that they have nothing to do with it, because like Alzheimer's disease, a very complex issue that involves brain function, autism is the same thing. It's a spectrum of illness with all kinds of different possible input. And so though vaccines are not directly causative, they contribute to the burden that can actually result in the problem. This is like Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's has been described by Dr. Dale Bredesen, B-R-E-D-E-S-E-N, who wrote the book End of Alzheimer's, Reversing Cognitive Decline. He describes the spectrum of Alzheimer's disease and actually clearly elucidated five distinct subtypes of Alzheimer's disease. Type 1 is inflammatory, the classic type of Alzheimer's, triggered probably by the APOE4 genotype that you can actually get a blood test to find out if you're actually at risk for this. And it's associated with inflammation. So the brain gets ruined by inflammation. Sugar, high sugar, causes inflammation. So type 1.5, still in the type 1 inflammatory, is glycotoxic. So people with sugar problems can get Alzheimer's disease. So diabetes actually can spill into the brain. And some natural doctors call Alzheimer's type 3 diabetes. And then type 2 Alzheimer's is atrophic. That's when you have withdrawal of all your hormones. You don't have enough of the sex hormones. Your adrenals might be kind of burned out. You don't have thyroid hormones. And so you end up pulling back on all the important things, including brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which grows new brain cells, and nerve growth factor. and even the loss of the hormone vitamin D. So type 3, though, is very interesting. It's toxic. And the reason I started talking about diabetes is I got a, or not diabetes, but dementia today, is that I got came across an article about, it's brand new, for Journal of Alzheimer's Disease reports, aluminum and tau, T-A-U, tau, in neurofibrillary tangles in familial Alzheimer's disease. They're talking about tau protein is like amyloid beta, and they're related to the pathology of Alzheimer's disease. These proteins are triggered and associated with aluminum. We've been talking about aluminum in Alzheimer's disease for many years, but there's never been enough evidence to prove that it's causative. I don't believe that it is, but I do believe that it triggers a problem in that it actually elucidates the expression of this tau protein. Tau protein and amyloid beta protein work together to cause Alzheimer's nerve destruction in the brain. And so it seems that the aluminum triggers the production of this protein, which is the problem protein. So aluminum doesn't cause dementia, but aluminum triggers the process that causes dementia. See how layered it is and how difficult it is to actually come up with actual causality. And this is why we have people discussing Dr. Bredesen's work, describing this spectrum illness in terms of the linear Western medicine paradigm. Unfortunately, so many people in Western medicine are stuck in the linear name it, blame it, tame it game of naming a disease, trying to blame one process out of all the myriad of billions of processes that go on in the body to be the cause for a disease and find a pill or a treatment for it. It's a reductionist way of thinking, and it doesn't work in biology because that's not the way systems work. And they try to punch holes in this theory by talking about the fact that this is so disparate. There's so many different approaches to it that you can't actually say this is an approach, except that we have hundreds of people responding to the approach and reversing cognitive decline. I've witnessed it in my practice, and it's usually multifactorial. I had one patient, a beautiful lady, Jane, who had she was unable to complete a sentence when she first came to my office. And we found that she had vascular disease, slow blood flow to her brain, and we found that she had withdrawal of hormones and neurotransmitters. After a year of supporting her hormones, increasing her neurotransmitters, and doing chelation therapy for the vascular problem, she was speaking in paragraphs. Unfortunately, she got lost in my follow-up at that point because her daughter moved her back to Virginia or wherever she was from. And so she didn't have a toxic metal. She didn't have the classic ApoE Alzheimer's, but she responded to therapy because therapy worked. But there are no pills for this. This is a broad-based, multifactorial treatment regimen.
Wow. We do have a gentleman on the phone, Al from Seminole, says he was diagnosed 4 years ago.
Yes, let's talk with Al.
Okay. Al, you there?
Hello.
Hello,
this is Al.
Can you hear
Hello?
Me?
Yes.
Wow. Yes.
So how are you, Al? What do you want to say?
I was, as you said, I was diagnosed 4 years ago with dementia. I went to the hospital. I had a mini stroke, and they took me to the hospital, and I was, all the tests were done, MRI, and with iodine and everything. And after 5 days, they let me out and said I had dementia. And I was 67 at the time, and they said I have the dementia of an 80-something-year-old, you know. And
wow.
They said it was probably Alzheimer's, because that's 80% of the time or something. But I don't think it is. I think it's more to do with blood vessels.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I think they call it, I can't remember.
Well, yeah, you got some memory issues. So I would say that you have type 4 type of Alzheimer's disease, which is the vascular type of Alzheimer's
disease. Vascular. That's the word I was looking for, vascular.
Yeah. So you have Alzheimer's of type 4 variety. And so
Type 4.
Type 4, yeah. That's the vascular type. And what I have witnessed is that vascular type dementia responds very well to the usual type of Western medicine vascular interventions, getting on statin drugs and getting your, because it really works. I'm not against them if you can take them and you're not toxic with them, because they do achieve medical benefit. So if you have small vessel disease in your brain and your cholesterol, LDL cholesterol is over 80, you need to get your LDL cholesterol under 80 to make actual impact on the blood vessels.
Mm-hmm.
Also, chelation therapy, vascular chelation therapy, American College Advancement in Medicine chelation is a recipe for healing the brain.
Vascular, what is that?
Chelation, C-H-E-L-A-T-I-O-N.
Is that a K? Chelation?
C-H.
C-H-E-L. Uh-huh.
C-H-E-L-A-T-I-O-N. Chelation.
A-T-I-O-N. Okay. I got it.
Yes. And that is a special intravenous therapy that one does on a weekly basis over the course of a year. You do about 40 treatments in a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I have witnessed people at the 40th treatment being able to get back on a tennis court because their chest pressure angina went away. I have watched the one woman I described have her speech pattern come back from being able to not complete a sentence to completing whole paragraphs.
Wow.
I would suggest that you look up a doctor near you that does chelation therapy and sign up for some treatment.
Chelation therapy.
Yes, and make sure you get your LDL cholesterol under 80.
LDL under 80.
Yes, those are two things. But find a doctor that understands brain health. You might want to go to the website Recode. Actually, it's Apollo Health Co., A-P-O-L-L-O healthco.com. They have a vast amount of information to teach you about all the different types of Alzheimer's and how to get therapy, and they have a network of doctors that actually treat people all over the country.
Oh, wow. I've also had 6 concussions in my life.
And that's type 5 dementia. That's traumatic brain injury related. So you have
can the two like interact and act together to form a dementia?
That's exactly how this works.
So you said 4 and 5.
Yeah, and never know. I mean, if you get some testing, you might have some inflammation. You might have some atrophy with lower testosterone levels. You might have some toxicity with presence of aluminum, mercury, lead, or petrochem toxins or mycotoxins, mold toxins in your system. A good brain health doctor looks at all of these different approaches and tries to find out all of the areas where you're having problems so that you can clean up the system completely.
Well, the MRI showed that I had a lot of, what do they call that, like cholesterol kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I had a lot of that,
over
a big part of my brain.
Yes.
And it was
need
the
to
part.
Have aggressive lipid therapy.
Yeah, lipid, that was it. Hmm. And there's such a thing as Lipol? What is it?
I'm sorry?
There's such a thing as Lipol therapy?
No, lipid therapy, like
lipid,
cholesterol drugs, diet, exercise, controlling the sugar, all these things work to control your cholesterol.
Okay. That's pretty much what my doctor told me to do. Plus all the medicines I'm on. Is it good to be on all these medicines?
If they're helping you, yes. If they're not, no.
Yeah, well, you know, the blood pressure medicine's definitely helping. My blood pressure's under control.
You really
and
have to keep
I'm
the blood
taking,
pressure controlled
psych,
in this situation, too.
I'm taking psych medicines.
And keeping your mood controlled in this situation is good, too. Yeah, all these things could be helpful.
Lamotrigine?
Well, there are many things that could be, but we don't need to go through your whole drug list today. That's for a functional medicine consult. But I'm just saying that if it's working, use it. If it's not, don't. And get some consultation with somebody who knows brain health.
Okay, that sounds like the best idea. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Al.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We have a good question online about red wine.
Oh, yeah. What about it?
Could Dr. Harvey speak about, I think I'll say this word right, resveratrol in red wine? Is it worth buying resveratrol in a capsule form to help stave off dementia?
Well, that's a really good question, because we know that the use of alcohol actually decreases brain white matter. So you actually have a potential for increased dementia risk by drinking alcohol, even 1 ounce a couple times a week. So there are benefits, though, for some of these foods, so to speak. Red wine is a food. It's preserved grapes. And in preserving the grapes, you preserve some of the good qualities like the resveratrol. Resveratrol, another related chemical, is called pterostilbene, P-T-E-R-O-S-T-I-L-B-E-N-E. That is related to resveratrol. Both are very highly potent antioxidants and cell detox signaling agents from red wine. And the resveratrol is really useful for the body. It helps with the vascular system. It helps with genetics. But, you know, I don't drink alcohol because it bothers my stomach. So you could get resveratrol in good old Concord grape juice, high resveratrol content, or you could get a capsule, which I find much easier because I don't drink much fruit juice. And an occasional treat of nice dark purple grape juice is fine, but I'd rather just take the capsule because I don't do that much sugar. So, yes, I think red wine is a good thing. If you are drinking it, limit it to a couple glasses a week. The resveratrol in it is excellent. But to get what's in an actual resveratrol pill, you probably need to drink a case of wine, and that would probably be not good on a daily basis.
We have Dave in Clearwater on the phone.
Okay. Dave, hi, Dr. Fred. My wife was diagnosed probably like 5 years ago. She had some mini strokes and diagnosed as dementia, and they put her on a Namyndia.
Yeah.
And the Namyndia was a real bad effect. It went from one power, you did a 14-day dose, and by the time they put her on the second one, it was like just real bad. So we stopped that. And so lately she's just been taking a statin drug and vitamin D, a lot of vitamins. I don't know. You think there would be the Namyndia would do a permanent damage?
No, actually, Namyndia is really a highly beneficial chemical. It's an antioxidant for the brain. And that your wife couldn't tolerate it means that something else was going on. For me, that means that there was a problem with her neurotransmitters because Namyndia works on preserving some of the neurotransmitters, specifically the ones that make you more alert and up. So it prevents some of the breakdown of adrenaline and of dopamine and of noradrenaline or norepinephrine. And so those chemicals make you a little bit more agitated. I would suspect that her mood got a little irritable when she was on it. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. She said it was like she was hallucinating with it.
Yeah. So in that kind of case, you need to actually do something that most Western doctors don't do, and that's actually test the neurotransmitter and maybe even in coordination with that, test the hormones, including the adrenals, because that could be one of the problems. A functional medicine doctor can look at those things. We have tests to look at the serotonin, the dopamine, the norepinephrine, and the epinephrine to see what that balance is. And we can use natural substances to help you rebalance that so you don't have to use the Namyndia. I found Namyndia very effective in many people, but occasionally these medications do have some adverse consequences. But your wife sounds like she has actually vascular type dementia.
And, right.
Because she's had the mini strokes. And so you need to, keep the LDL under 80 and find somebody who does chelation therapy near you, because it's the only thing proven to reverse vascular disease besides the statin.
Okay.
We have proof. The trial to assess chelation therapy was published in Journal of the American Medical Association in 2013, and Anthony or Gervasio Lamas, Tony Lamas, is the cardiologist at Sinai in Miami, who's actually doing the second trial because he wants Medicare to pay for it. He was so thrilled by the results of the first trial, he went back and got $30 million from the National Institutes of Health and is doing trial number two. And so he's going to prove that this works and get Medicare to pay for it. In the meantime, it's still a cash intervention because for years, the American medical establishment has tried to keep people away from this valuable treatment because sense to make more money.
Right. Okay. Also, since that the mini stroke, they also said possibly blind migraines because her eye will droop in that. So they have her on Vermilipil. Vermilipil?
That's not. Oh, Verapamil.
Yes.
I don't know. Channel blocker. That's interesting. But I think if she dealt with the inflammation, saw a functional medicine doctor or a doctor who specifically works with Bredesen's RECODE protocol, you might find some help outside the system that would make her even thrive better.
Okay. And I guess the exercise is a big key too, right?
Huge. 30 minutes a day.
Okay. All right, Dr. Fred, appreciate it.
So welcome.
All right, we have Will from Temple Terrace.
Hey, Will.
How are you guys hear me all right?
Yes.
So I had a question for you, Dr. Fred. Last year, I read a study that they did in MIT about the gamma frequency. Have you ever heard of that?
The gamma frequency?
Yeah.
You're talking about the gamma brainwave.
Correct. So basically what they did is they... First, they started with sound, and they basically played something at 40 hertz for a minute made them listen to it for 20 minutes. Well, these were in mice, you know, because it hasn't gotten to that. And then they started linking it up with also pulses of light. But the results were legitimately remarkable. Like, the scientist was blown away. She said, the results have been nothing but too good to be true. They said... based on their studies for one session of like 30 minutes, they had almost 90% amyloid plaque decline. So their thought is what it does is it basically restarts the, I guess, cleaning process and syncs up the whole brain on the same schedule and then basically makes it restart. So I was curious about your thoughts, if you've heard of that or know anything about that.
Well, yeah, gamma waves it makes so much sense because your gamma waves are the ones that you use. They're the ones that are produced by high-level thinking, processing, learning. And so we already have the evidence that learning reverses or prevents dementia. And so if you're concentrating and solving problems, you make these brain waves and you end up with less dementia. So it only makes sense to me that if you stimulate somehow to make more gamma waves, you're going to reduce that. It's really amazing, though, that it actually reduces the neurofibrillary tangles and such, so it actually produces a therapeutic benefit that's not been found in any of the other treatment modalities that they've actually put into a study. All 278 chemicals did not work, but this is brilliant.
Yeah, they're trying to, you know, get it green-lighted. I think they're basically in trials for humans right now. I mean, obviously, it'll be a lot harder to tell if there's plaque buildup because you can't exactly, you know, cut our brains open at the end. But as far as a non-invasive therapy, like, literally, you can get a light or a speaker and sit in a room for 20 minutes and potentially have, you know, very life-changing results. I wanted to throw that out there for people that haven't heard about it. But yeah, it's an MIT.
That's great, Will. I love it. I think that the alternative would be, rather than sitting in a room alone, you, as an English speaker, learn Spanish and go out and meet Spanish-speaking people, and you will actually improve your brain health even more, and you'll improve the health of society even more. Same thing goes for Spanish speakers. Learn some English and go out and meet some English-speaking people, and let's make the nation whole. And everybody's brains will work better.
I love it. All right, well, thanks a lot for what you do, Doc.
Thank you, Will, for bringing this one up. Great topic.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We have Lou in Clearwater. He said his brother just passed away from esophageal cancer.
Oh, no. Sorry, Lou.
Lou's gone. He went away. I've got quite a few emails, but let me get
just an aside about that.
Yes.
Esophageal cancer. Avoid nicotine. Avoid alcohol.
Mm.
Two of the major causes for it.
Yeah. God, it's been 22 years since I had a cigarette, and I'm proud of that.
Congratulations, my friend. That's awesome.
just before Easter in 1999. It was a heart thing, and my cardiologist at the time, he said, do you understand what smoking does to your heart? And, you know, the normal person's not really going to relay that. And I just listened to him, and that was it. It's the last cigarette I ever had.
Wonderful.
So I listened to him. Somebody's asking about brain zaps. Have you heard of something called brain zaps? Is it a sign of a serious problem? What can be done to treat it?
Well, I've heard people use that term before, and I'm not quite sure what it relates to, because I've heard people talk about it as being an electric kind of feeling that shoots out. Some people have felt like it was a momentary pause in their thinking. I've heard lots of different things. So if you have oddly disruptive neurologic symptoms, I think it's worth it to get a neurologic consult, possibly an EEG, because they could be mini seizures or something. But yeah, I think you need a clinical evaluation, because I'm not sure what a brain zap might be in physiology or anatomy.
Yeah, I've never heard of that at all before.
Oh, people tell me all kinds of interesting terms. I'm just not sure what this would mean.
It could well be one that you know, and it's just not, they haven't heard it that way.
Right.
Another email says, on a previous program, you said you are waiting for another vaccine that would be coming out at a later date. Do you have the name, description, or manufacturer of this vaccine?
Oh, yeah. I've mentioned the manufacturer several times. Novavax, N-O-V-A-V-A-X. They are in charge of a really interesting new platform for vaccine development. And I like their technology. Apparently, the studies for efficacy and safety were completed in the UK, and GlaxoSmithKline is ramping up to make 80 million doses or something in a facility in the UK. But apparently, the US study has yet to be completed. And unless the FDA accepts the US or the UK study as adequate, it'll probably be mid-May or mid-June before Novavax is allowed to release, because they haven't finished this arm of the study yet.
Yeah.
But it's a standard protein vaccine like the flu vaccine. It doesn't use mRNA, and it doesn't use a virus vector to infect you with the mRNA. It just puts the protein in your arm, and your immune system reacts to the protein, from what I understand. So we have a waiting time to go for that. We're at 1/3 of the population, maybe 30%, a little less than a third so far that has been inoculated. And it seems to be progressing. At this rate, I think I've read that they're thinking that possibly herd immunity will be by the end of August. But we'll have to watch.
The phones are really lighting up now for some reason.
Let's talk.
All right, let's Chris in Clearwater.
Hello, Chris.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to ask if you've heard of Professor Christopher Exley. He's an English chemist known for his research on the effects of aluminum exposure and finding that autistic brains are much higher in aluminum. And he's a professor of bioorganic chemistry and group leader of the bioinorganic chemistry laboratory at Keele University. So that's where he's professor. He recommends aluminum being removed with only silica-rich mineral water, he says, is the only thing he's found effective. These silica-rich waters that are like spring waters that are on the market. But
that's an interesting thought. I actually developed a chelation, natural chelation formula myself about 2004, and it worked very well to remove aluminum.
Oh, great. Does that have anything like, I was wondering if maybe zeolite or...
I've not bought into the zeolite fanatic thing at this point yet. Zeolite is nanoparticulate aluminum silicate. There's another nanoparticulate aluminum silicate called asbestos. And though they do have differing physical structures, I still have concerns that the smaller the nanoparticulate aluminum silicate with asbestos, the worse the mesothelioma later in life. And yeah. I have not yet seen long-term data on the use of zeolite. Are we going to develop mesothelioma from ingesting it? I don't know.
There's a concern with the micronized zeolite being pulverized in order, like you say, to release all these toxins that it has naturally absorbed over time, and then, it doesn't really do us any good that way. But I also wanted to ask food-grade diatomaceous earth.
Oh, yeah, diatomaceous earth is not a bad idea. It's very similar to the nanoparticulate silica, but it's actually not nanoparticulate, it's microparticulate, so it can't invade your body as much. I use natural products, though, from the plant kingdom. It's cilantro and garlic. Cysteine, the amino acid, alpha lipoic acid. And so that's part of the group of chemicals that are in there. One also is shilajit, the fulvic acid. It's a very good binder.
Yeah, I take all those. It's so important, as you talk about, to detox all the time. It can't be emphasized enough how incredibly toxic everything is, and just when you take these things, you notice a huge improvement when you stop taking them. You notice an usually deterioration in a short amount of time, but at least speaking for myself. I also wanted to ask about other sources of silica, like the food-grade diatomaceous earth, which I do take, although I guess I might also advise, there's a warning with that it seems like it might mechanically destroy the good flora as well, so you might want to supplement separately with probiotics and prebiotics and, keep your gut flora happy. But it also kills the parasites and other things by mechanical means of scraping them. And, that's why how pesticide in the garden and things like that. So, I've read good studies on diatomaceous earth also for cardiovascular atherosclerosis and, but I see other sources for silica, like
there's actually organic silica out there. There's a choline stabilized orthosilicic acid, which I use for treating wrinkly skin and thin hair and thinning bones. It works great to build up more collagen.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, folks. Most folks are deficient in silica, so that's. I'm glad that you're talking about it. And also, bamboo is a bamboo extract. I found is a pretty inexpensive source, but the diatomaceous.
Oh yeah, it's probably the least. Silica, right.
Yeah. In horsetail, I've seen some warnings on that. Horsetail being a source of silica that is probably the best known, I think, out there in the health world. But I've seen some drawbacks to that. But I don't have them at hand right now, so I'll just save that for. I'll just email you that if you're not aware.
Sure. No, I just think horsetail hasn't been as effective for me at getting silica in. It seems to be bound up in the horsetail too much. It doesn't actually change things for people much.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Clinically, I've watched it. I haven't seen studies. There's I get better results using the organic choline-stabilized orthosilicic acid than horsetail. Horsetail used to be in a lot of my bone supplements, but now it's just the choline-stabilized orthosilicic.
And what's the source of that?
That's actually laboratory made. It is kind of quasi a drug, but it's a mineral, so it hasn't actually crossed over into the drug world. But it's made by a Belgian company.
Okay. All right. Great. I'll look into that. All right. Okay. Well, doctor, thank you very much. That's all I have for you.
So welcome. Have a good day.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Before we go back to the phones, we have an answer from. Somebody about the brain zaps?
Yes.
Gentleman said, I've heard the term in the context of withdrawal symptoms from discontinuing SSRIs.
Oh, I've heard it there too, yes. So again, it could be lots of things.
Oh, yeah. All right, what do you say we get to Chris and Valrico?
Hey, Chris.
Hello.
How are you?
Hi.
What you got today?
I'm good. I just wanted to ask about Plavix as an anticoagulant because I refuse to go on statins, and I guess I do have high cholesterol, which I've been bringing down slowly through exercise and changes in diet. I will not do a statin, but I'm not sure about the Plavix.
I've got a question. Why would you flat out refuse to do a highly beneficial medication if it was beneficial for you?
Because I have Barrett syndrome, and I'm afraid that between my Barrett syndrome and the statins, I would be creating a system that's not working anymore.
Well, that's an interesting thought. Yes, I know of no interaction of statins with Barrett's disease, but it's an interesting thought. The Plavix is an antiplatelet agent, just like aspirin. They work in the same area in different ways, keeping platelets from sticking.
Right. So, but I'm allergic to aspirin, so I can't use aspirin.
For me, being on Plavix means that you have a significant amount of risk that you've experienced clot-related problems like mini strokes or peripheral vascular disease or other problems that would have actually shown up as an issue. And has that happened to you?
Nope. The only time I ever had a blood clot was after I had knee surgery as a teenager, and it was because of the surgery, not because. But I think the doctors are really concerned because of my health profile. They're just doing it out of standard operating procedure, maybe?
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know of Plavix having an indication for prevention of anything when you haven't had an issue with anything related to it. So that's a question. I think that actually really getting rid of your inflammation and doing things that would actually look at your extended lipid panel, doing the lipid particles, looking at lipoprotein little a, looking at LPPLA2, C-reactive protein, oxidized LDL. Quest has a lab called the Cleveland Heart Test. It looks at inflammation and whether you have risk from having cholesterol issues. And then there's another company called Boston Heart that does a brilliant breakdown of your cholesterol to see if you're more of an absorber or a producer in your liver. If you're an absorber, you can really work on your diet by eliminating saturated fat, eggs, and taking fiber and watch your cholesterol plummet. If you're a liver producer, niacin might be effective. But I would look at these other things and see why in the world would you be on a medication like Plavix that has indications for somebody who has a an unstable angina. They have chest pains related to actual acute myocardial syndrome or an acute ST elevation heart attack. If you just had a heart attack, or if you had a recent one in the past 6 months or a recent stroke or established peripheral arterial disease. I don't see any other reason than those indications to be on Plavix, which doesn't make much sense. And aspirin for a woman who's never had a cardiovascular event has no evidence. Doing a preventive aspirin in a woman is basically risking an event when you have no benefit. So I don't see a reason for Plavix in a woman who's not had an event. I'd talk to my doctor and see what's, you know, let's talk about reality. And if you're taking Plavix and you're on Prilosec or Nexium, then you're on dangerous interaction drugs.
Good to know, because I am on Omeprazole.
Well, yeah, that's a dangerous interaction. And I can't see why, if you're treating Barrett's with Omeprazole, you'd be on a non-essential Plavix. Talk to your doctor. There's a problem here.
Okay. Thank you. That's kind of where I was thinking, but I wasn't sure because I'm not medically trained. I'm in the healthcare field, but I work, you know, in the mental health field. And, you know, I learn a lot from what I do.
No doubt.
Thank you so much, Dr. Fred. I appreciate you.
You're welcome, Chris. Have a great day.
You too.
We have quite a few emails. And one of them's from Anonymous, wants to know, could you recommend a good liver cleanse? And no T-U-D-C-A, thank you.
No T-U-D-C-A?
Yeah, that's what it says.
I don't know what that one is.
I don't either.
Some weird herb that somebody found on the internet. But a good liver cleanse would be to avoid alcohol, avoid nicotine, avoid as many external toxins as you possibly can, and then do vegetables. If you just eat vegetables for 3 days, you've done a liver cleanse. And I'm talking about doing the gamut. You want to eat like 15 different vegetables each day during your cleanse. If you feel like augmenting that with some medical medium celery juice, go for it. I love celery juice. It's great for you. But if you just eat stalks of celery, you're getting the same thing. Plus, you get fiber to clean out your gut, which is even better liver cleanse, because if you poop 3 or 4 times a day, you're really downloading that liver. So
yes.
Lots of fiber, 35 grams of fiber a day. That's a liver cleanse. Lots of water, 8 ounce glasses minimum. If you're exercising, do 12. That's a liver cleanse. And then you can take some other things to support it, like milk thistle, N-acetylcysteine, alpha-lipoic acid, the full range of activated B vitamins, including methylcobalamin, methylfolate, and a full complement of microminerals. So a good multivitamin, that's a 4 or 6 capsule a day kind of multivitamin, will support your liver cleanse. And I love drainage or drainer drops that are homeopathic remedies that signal to your body just to dump the toxins. Those are all good cleansers.
Now, that's a lot of different things you can do for that.
Yes.
Yes. Well, it's a very important organ, you know.
Absolutely.
We have a question about fish oil. If I'm only taking one of the big soft gel fish oil pills a day, is that enough for any health benefits? And I can't bring myself to take more. Also, is salmon oil a good choice? I find it a bit cheaper.
Salmon oil is a fine choice. The way you determine your dose is not by taking a big fat pill, it's by looking on the back label. And what you want to shoot for is more concentrated pills so you can take less of them, or a more concentrated liquid if you're going to do it in a spoon. And you want to try and shoot for 2,000 milligrams of omegas a day. Not 2,000 milligrams of fish oil, because you could have 200 milligrams of omegas in a 1,000 milligram fish oil cap. You're only getting 200 milligrams. It's not a lot for a big fat fish oil cap. The fish oil caps for the manufacturer are cheaper if they dilute it. They're much more expensive if it's all intensively concentrated omegas. So, again, 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams a day. Salmon's good. Eat wild salmon. You can get fish oil, good quality omegas, if you eat canned salmon, which is the cheapest way to get wild salmon. But, no, you can't know by just taking a pill, and you can't even know by shooting for a dose. So I would say get your omega check done. Different labs do it. My favorite one is a finger stick from a company called Omega Quant. But Quest does an Omega Index. Spectracell does an Omega. Vibrant America does an Omega. There's a lot of different places that check your omegas. You can get your balance. It's the best way to do it.
Now we have another one, too. This is quite a long one here. It's Nina. She has a pinworm infection. And okay. She first bought OTC pinworm medicine, which her husband and her both took. He is asymptomatic. A family doctor said to seem to believe, he didn't believe me at first. So I gathered it, but she had...
Considering it's the most common worm in the gut, and it's in so many people, I can't believe they wouldn't believe her. That's terrible.
Hmm. I'm trying to read through the lines.
So she tried to do some natural, and it didn't seem to go away.
She ordered a stool sample to test, which came back negative for all the usual parasites a year after I noticed.
It's tough to find pinworms. Often they do hide, but maybe her treatment did work. So if she's having symptoms of parasites, it's probably worth getting evaluated by another doctor.
Mm.
Well,
she's since had a stroke also. She was in a hospital in rehab for at least 2 months, did not notice any worms during that time until I came home and it started up again. So she said she was depressed and stressed and depressed.
Well, did she let her dog lick her face and lick her mouth? I mean, how would it suddenly come back when she went home unless there's some new contact?
That's what I'm saying.
And a lot of people can get parasites by letting their little puppy dogs lick their face, lick their mouth.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. That's an interesting question. I would say go and get another evaluation and look at your possible sources of exposure.
Yeah. And one other person wants to know, are corn oil or canola oil considered healthy oils?
I wouldn't use either of them because mostly corn oil is from genetically manipulated organisms that are damaging the environment, et cetera. Canola, it's just not the right oil for the human body. It's the wrong length fat. It doesn't fit inside of our cells. And so we don't really want canola, even though it's been foisted upon us as a great non-saturated fat. But I would say use canola to power your diesel engine, because that's what Dr. Diesel designed the engine to run on, and use the corn oil for the same thing.
Hmm. I don't use either, because I remember you saying that before, that they're really not good.
Not worth it.
I'm trying to find more. We got about 4 or 5 minutes left. And it says here, as always, great show. My question is, have you ever heard of studies on the gamma frequency? They have some very promising early results in mice for dementia.
That's the guy that we talked to.
Huh?
I think that's the guy that we talked to. We talked about the gamma frequency with him.
Yeah, that's right, too, Will. That's right. Here, I'm reading to say he did both. He put in an email.
Email to me, please. I'd like that. Are there any no more on the phone?
Yes, Rosemary just showed up. There you go. Rosemary.
Hello, oh. Rosemary.
Hi, Dr. Harvey. Yes, Rosemary Cannon here. I just was asking if you could repeat the two studies. This had to do with the conversation about statins. And one was something Cleveland something, and the other was part...
There's two laboratory companies that do some really interesting testing. You can access Cleveland Heart Labs was bought by Quest. So you can get the Cleveland Heart panel through Quest. And the other one is another company called the Boston Heart Labs. And Boston does a really interesting cholesterol absorption test. And they also do a really cool test that I can't find anywhere else, the statin tolerance genetics. It's a gene called SLCO1B1. And if you have abnormalities in that gene, you're really prone to getting the muscle aches and inflammation from statin. However, I've done the test many times, and I've only found about four people that actually carry one of the genes. I found one person that carries both of the genes. So out of like hundreds, I found very few people that actually have the genetic intolerance of statin. And so there's lots, like with Alzheimer's, like with autism, it's a spectrum. Some people can tolerate them for some reasons, some people can't for other reasons, and some people have genetics that just make it really impossible. But we can find a way, no matter whether you can take the statin or not.
Okay, and is that something that you, it sounds like, is something that you can order?
Yes, I order those tests all the time.
Uh-huh, okay.
Rosemary? Yeah, it just went away. It was her phone and it rang, so she might have had a problem with that. We're out of time anyway. We only got about 40 seconds left, and now two phone lines are going to come up. Nothing we can do with them.
I'll do it real fast if you can, or no, we're done. Either way.
No, it's really, you're not going to get anything because it's less than a minute left now.
Excellent.
But thank you for a great show, and thank Clark for answering the phones. Great job.
Wonderful.
So
have a great day, and
all right.
Great couple of weeks.
All right, you too, and I will talk to you shortly.
Good.
This is WMNF Tampa, 88.5 on the left side of your dial. Stay tuned for NPR News and then background briefing after that.